Okay, that's enough of that. What are we doing here?
We're bringing back a dormant podcast, and we start off with the worst movie you could have possibly imagined.
I regret the drive over here.
I regret spending the time setting all of this up. This is the fourth incarnation of Direct-to-Netflix, now going under the moniker of How About Notflix. I'm Connor.
I'm Colin.
And unfortunately, I'm Al.
And just to set this up, I wanted to... It seems like this podcast comes back whenever we've reached a new milestone in streaming. The first time around, we had to get most of our movies on DVD. The second time around, it was just Netflix that was full of shit. And the third time around, Amazon and Hulu started joining in. And now we have a whole new world of Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of shit Disney Channel original movies just to wade through on that, on top of all the other shit Disney has put out in the last, like, at least 10, 15 years.
So this is How About Notflix, a movie or podcast where we get our name wrong, get the celebrity name wrong, and get the movie names wrong.
Well, to be fair, I'm the one who gets the movie names wrong.
Then we just repeat it.
Yep.
But I wanted to start out by talking about the sequel to a film that should have never existed, and the sequel that should have never been made with the budget that it had. And of course, I'm talking about Iron Sky 2, The Coming Race. This is a film that was directed by Timo Vuorensola. It has a laundry list of writers.
Also, there's a laundry list of studios that put funding into this, which also lost a lot of money, I would imagine.
And producers. The story has one person on the screenplay. There's three producers, five people listed as story by. Based on characters by Energia Productions, Blindspot Pictures, Johanna Sinisalo, and Michael Kolesniko. It is definitely not that deep of a film to require this much inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
So, Colin, I'm the only one that did homework before this because I'm an idiot. I went back and I watched the original Iron Sky film because I have not seen it since 2012.
And actually, to preface, I have not watched it in 6 years myself, so...
And Al has never watched it.
No, I barely knew of its existence.
You don't need to know the premise to understand this film. Humanity destroys itself by nuclear war after finding out that there's Nazis on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Cue an hour and a half just... ultra-saturated film. And I honestly think that's the only thing that really made it distinct. Because the first film was like 90% green screen. But very oversaturated blue and white. So, in this film, the film starts out letting you know just how dated the references are going to be, because this film was apparently written in 2012 for a film that was supposed to be coming out in 2016. And if you thought that 2016 references to Sarah Palin were outdated, just delay it by 3 more years.
Yeah, because I remember when I saw the first Iron Sky, my first thought was, the Sarah Palin references were dated even when that came out. In fact, they were probably dated even when those jokes were written.
Yeah. The series has a... series. Both movies have what I kind of think about as very baffling mistakes that they make. Like, the first movie has a presidential election taking place in 2018, which doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the whole President Sarah Palin. But everything in this movie, and it seems hard to say because it's an hour and a half long, everything in this movie just seems to kind of slog along. Mm-hmm. And it starts out with the opening credit sequence where we see President Sarah Palin going to the Antarctic. And that's intercut with clearly Vladimir Putin like ripping off his shirt and just dancing in slow motion. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is this like 4 or 5 minute sequence basically is just to tell us that President Sarah Palin and Vladimir Putin are both lizard people. Mm-hmm. And that's going to set up a very important part of our quote unquote plot.
It also kind of sets the tone for the type of comedy, because this is the type of movie that it doesn't work as a comedy. It doesn't work as an action movie. Well, dramatic parts are secondary, but like nothing works. There's like at least three different things they're trying to do and none of it lands.
I feel like each writer was almost competing with each other, because you have these very out of place. It's like a Friedberg and Seltzer movie where you have these very out of place references that seem to be stuck in just to kind of make a point. Like there's a whole plot surrounding the Jobsism. Apparently, After the 1900 remnants of humanity that escaped Earth and went to the Nazi base on the moon, they started up a religion based around Steve Jobs, which apparently has like a dozen people now, of the survivors that actually follow it.
Now, I'm the type of person where I'm actually openly tell people that I'm actually glad Steve Jobs had pancreatic cancer, but I will also say that these jokes, even with that in mind, do not land for me. And having Tom Green being like the front man for this really doesn't help.
Yeah, I don't know who I'm more disappointed by seeing. Tom Green in this movie or Andy Milonakis in Halloween.
Andy Milonakis, yeah. 200%.
And it makes sense. It just makes sense that Tom Green, what with his thriving career, would end up in a movie like this.
No, I think his peak was probably his like little cameo in Charlie's Angels, but he only got that because he was dating Drew Barrymore at the time. And then he did Freddy Got Fingered, which dropped him off the map, and now he just, I don't know, I guess he just kind of shows up.
Doesn't he have his own podcast network, kind of like Anthony Cumia and shit like that?
He's been doing podcasts for a very long time. The last time I think anyone really heard of it was like 12, 14 years ago when 4chan was constantly trolling him.
Yeah.
And just kind of making him lose his mind on the video feed. Prank calling him. But Tom Green, if there's anything that could put together this trifecta of Sarah Palin jokes, Steve Jobs jokes, it's Tom Green playing a guy trying to make a serious role.
Although I guess this is the... I don't know if this is a positive, the one positive thing, but out of all the people that they have as far as, like, you know, Hitler or anyone like that, the guy who played Steve Jobs actually kind of looked like him, like lizard person Steve Jobs. Actually wasn't that bad.
And again, like I said, with hard-to-understand jokes, they screwed up the Apple parody right off the bat when he tells them to open up their e-prayer app. But then they fix it when they find out that someone jailbroke their iPad, and he excommunicates them using an app called iExcommunicate. Mm-hmm. Did two different people write that, and they just didn't care to notice?
I'm sure though, like with the amount of people, because you said this feels like it was made by a committee, it was probably just let's just shit this out and move on.
They have 5 writers credited.
Mm-hmm.
And they parodied the Apple commercial, the 1984 Apple commercial, just completely out of nowhere. Like I said, like a Friedberg and Seltzer film, where she just slow motion our main character, who I'll get to in a second, main character slow motion grabs a sledgehammer and just throws it through the front door for absolutely no reason when she could have just opened it up. And let's get to the main character, Laura Rossi plays Obi Washington. She's the daughter of James Washington and Renate Richter, played by Julia Dietz. And Julia is one of the holdovers from the first film, and so is Wolfgang Kurzfleisch, who was also in the previous film. They couldn't get Jamie Washington back, presumably because he was too embarrassed to be part of a sequel. And they explain that by never really explaining it. Like, she, at one point, the mom tells Obi, she's like, "Oh, your father and I are so proud of you." Like, they never refer to the dad in the past tense, like he's dead or anything, or say that he died. He's just not there. Which,
during the one scene when she goes into the back of that Jobs Church thing, the mom's praying, and it looks like it's a picture of what I assume to be the father on her phone or whatever. So, I mean, there's at least that.
Again, I'm willing to bet that those two scenes were written by two different writers, because they never really acknowledge whether or not he's still alive. But Obi Washington is the bionic POC woman, because it's acknowledged early on that she's not only the only person qualified to do anything on this moon base, which is in the process of falling apart, but apparently she's the only person that is even moderately interested in keeping this moon base from falling apart.
I believe it was 1,020 people. Yeah,
it was like 1,900 people. And she's the only person that bothered to learn the mechanics to keep everyone from dying, which they point out several times over the course of the first half of the film, where something will happen and the moon base will start falling apart, and then she'll tinker some wires together and everything will be okay. But she can do everything. Mm-hmm. She faces no real conflict over the film.
Mm-hmm. Although, actually, I guess this one bugged you both more than me. And don't get around to bug me as well. But I guess we have to move on to the quote-unquote love interest, the Russian guy.
Yes. Sasha. Who's surprisingly played by an actual Russian guy. Mm. I thought it was fake because his... Either he was born in Finland, where I'm pretty sure this movie was shot. But the guy's name is Vladimir Burlakov. But he kind of breaks his accent a couple of times, and it sounds horrible. Mm-hmm. It's worse than the new era Chekhov. But he plays the very poor role of the comedy wuss in this film, where he's constantly proving his masculinity and talking about how he's Russian, he fights bears, and then at the first sign of danger, he screams like a little girl.
Although, actually, I guess there's the other one is that there's the, the third guy, where it's like the big muscular guy who comes along with him. And that's actually a guy where you can tell he's probably actually funny in real life. But he's just given, like, just shit material. I don't know. I feel like out of everyone's comedic timing, his was the best. But you can only go so far with a script like this.
He reminded me of a low rent. He's the dollar store version of Joint Boy from
Kenny. Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Jesus.
I'm glad you saw that too. But I did make a note in my legal pad here. One plus side I can say about this film is that they did really good with the sets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, you can tell that this film had a higher budget because it wasn't just Nazi uniforms and green screen. Like, they had some really good effects with the costumes.
Yeah.
They looked like holdovers from, like I said, from a 1990s Land of the Lost film remake. But, like, they had costumes and stuff that made it look like they had some actual effort put into it. like I said, it's a film that did not deserve this much effort, being the sequel to The Iron Sky, a film about moon Nazis. Mm-hmm. It also didn't have a lot of the race stuff in the original. Like James Washington gets injected with an albinizer serum that makes him white. And in the film, it looks like they just threw white glitter on his face and dyed his hair white.
Yeah, I feel like that doesn't... I guess that kind of shows what a different world we live in, watching the movie we did now, and talking about the previous Iron Sky.
But at the end of the film, he finds a de-albinizer serum and makes himself black again. And in between the films, so we have our mulatto, mixed race child of a model, a black male model, and a Nazi, and she's the star of our film. I kind of got to hand it to this film. It had a long setup, and there's a whole kind of subplot where Wolfgang Kurzfleisch, in the first film, he's constantly eating what seems to be chocolates, and then it's revealed in this film that it's actually he's part of the lizard race of people, and they're not chocolates. It's like this energy compound that gives him life.
And actually, I guess kind of going into the Iron Sky lore, for lack of a better term, where it shows that he's like him and a bunch of buddies, a bunch of lizard people. They come down during prehistoric times. They feed, I think, some of the chocolate to like Adam and Eve, who turn out to be monkeys.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, I was like, oh, is this trying to be like this like kind of like edgy humor? But it's like, it feels like it would be edgy in like 1979, not in 2019.
It sounds like a plot out of Futurama. Like, oh, I was back during the primate ages, and I gave the evolution serum to two monkeys that I decided to name Adam and Eve.
And actually,
and somehow that knowledge transferred down to the point where it got written in a Bible.
But actually, a lot of this movie kind of made me think of, like, it almost like if they were models after Ross Patterson on some level, where it tried to have this, like, very goofy with, like, oh, it has Hitler, or it has, someone from the Crusades. And, but then it just, like, tries to be serious in spots, and it almost made me think of the last 10 minutes of FDR American Badass, where it starts to play a little straight and it just does not work. But the thing is that was a good movie up until that point. This, on the other hand, this was like the whole 90 minutes of trying to be dramatic in spots, trying to be comedic in spots, trying to have action. And again, it's just like this unholy trinity of shit that doesn't work.
And there's no jokes. The comedy, if you want to call it that, is just a series of throwing things in and like throwing in references and seeing if people will notice it. Like the reference, like the 1984 commercial, again, screwing up the e-prayer app for the whole Jobsism. Like, who really remembers Steve Jobs nowadays? Mm. Even most Apple fans don't really remember Steve Jobs. He died, they mourned for like a day, and then it was like, oh, forget that asshole, the next iPhone is out. Mm-hmm. So it feels like something, it feels like these were all jokes that got rejected from Scary Movie 6. Like, oh my God, it's a church, it's a religion based around Steve Jobs, it's lizard people, Sarah Palin references.
Although I guess now, like, it's probably a good time to bring up the like that the movies that this may or may not have been ripping off. The two movies I immediately thought of were definitely Star Wars: The Force Awakens, where there was like a lot of beats, like, you know, you have the junky ship that comes in because when it arrives, it's almost like that scene in The Force Awakens when Han and Chewie have their own ship. It's just like kind of this like confined shithole.
Oh, you're saying the the Nazi spaceship looks kind of like the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when Rey and Finn come in, it just has that similar look to it. But then there's also the whole, when they crash land the planet, they're in like a snowy environment. You have your spoiler alert near the end of the movie where the parent character gets murdered by the antagonist. And just there's a lot of like similar story beats that I kind of like, at least I thought they were going for.
I want to think that the mom got murdered for the same reason Jamie Washington didn't appear in this, where it's like, where they announced that they were making a third film, and she's just like, mm-mm, like just kill my character off. No fucking way am I doing that.
Mm-hmm. Although
it's the same with like Danny Trejo, where we've talked about that before, where he'll appear in a film. But he has the stipulations. His character has to drink tequila during any of his scenes. And he's got to be killed off in like 10 minutes of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
And there is going to be a third movie for this somehow. But like I said, it goes into the comedy being very little more than just references to things. And there's a whole part at the end where there's a chase sequence. They get the Holy Grail, which is the thing that they need. They go to the center of the Earth to get a Holy Grail that looks a lot like a pink salt bowl, like in a cup. And they're being chased out of the, being chased on like bone chariots, being pulled by dinosaurs. And it's playing the Phantom of the Opera music. While also they just pull a whole scene from Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm. You know, at first I didn't get the Indiana Jones reference early on, but when it showed the guy being dragged by like the dinosaur cart, and I was like, okay, this is definitely Raiders of the Lost Ark territory.
And like a Friedberg and Seltzer movie, the references don't make sense. Like they go through the whole process of having Obi ask how much the thing weighs. This Holy Grail that's powering this giant ball of life that when she removes it is going to cause it to crash down. But she goes through the whole process of figuring out its weight and then putting something in its place. It's an Indiana Jones reference that doesn't even make sense in the context that they're using it for.
And then also...
But it's played completely straight. Like, it's not, you know... She doesn't put the thing on and then everything starts collapsing and they go, well, that was stupid.
No, actually, that's the other issue is that... and I, honestly, this is the type of thing where if it was a funny comedy, you could let it slide. But there's a lot of plot convenience, like... when they start running out, conveniently right when they're out by the entrance, that's when everything starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
Then there's a... what was the other one? It was the ship. The ship that crashed land, and it was completely irreversibly destroyed. And then they get back to the ship, it flies. Like
This film has a lot of very high conveniences in it. Like, there's a whole little subplot where she discovers the German guy that's still alive from the first movie, and Tom Green overhears the conversation, and we think that like he's gonna rat her out or he's gonna blackmail her or something, or he's gonna like sabotage it, and then he's just like, can I go with you? Sure. They go out to steal the ship, and they find Malcolm the dollar store joint boy, and he's and she just straight up tells him their secret plan to go to the center of the Earth to steal the Holy Grail so they can save the remnants of humanity, and he's like, yeah, cool, can I go with you?
And then also that's not even going with the fact that the whole setup of this is they're gonna try and knock him out, and the Russian guy totally fucks up on it. And then the main character, she has this thing where she was clearly going to, like, whack him over the head. So you had a couple of bad jokes leaning into that one.
And they make, again, jokes that aren't really jokes. When Sasha punches him in the back of the head with this clearly metal helmet that he's wearing, he takes off the helmet. He's like, dude, what are you doing? My whole outfit is basically made to be punch-proof.
But yeah, that's the thing I remember from the first movie is that whether the jokes land or not, they were clearly jokes. This one just feels like, I don't know, you're not sure what they're aiming for it most times.
I don't want to sound racist, but it sounds like German comedy. Germans don't really make jokes with punchlines.
Oh, I'm not too well versed on German comedy.
Maybe Finnish comedy is really close to German comedy. It's not really haha funny. It's just like a cute anecdote.
I guess you could say their comedic career is finished.
Fuck.
No, but I guess there's different types of dry humor, because I like dry humor, but this was just like...
It's not dry humor. There's no joke.
It's non-humor.
Yeah.
It's like the non-jokes that were getting passed around years ago, where it's like, you know, why did the chicken cross the road to get to the other side? Or it's like, you know, I don't know. Knock, knock, who's there? Me. It's the jokes that have no punchline, and the humor is that there's nothing there. But and even once they land on the planet, they land on the planet and the ice cracks underneath the ship. And I was like, okay, is it gonna they're gonna fall in the water and there's gonna be like some rescue scene and some people are gonna die. No, they happen to fall on just the right patch of ice that happens to be over a cavern that goes straight down to the center of the Earth. Mm-hmm. Convenience. There's no... For the main characters, there's no conflict.
Actually, coming back with that one, when it shows Discount Bergman Joint Boy, when he confronts, like, the dinosaurs, and then, like the one gets him by the leg, I kind of thought, oh, this guy's screwed, or this is guy.
It looked
this guy's
like he got his throat torn out.
That's yeah, no, yeah,
thought, he's dead.
Because there was, like the one dinosaur bites him on the head, and you can see, like, a splatter of blood come out.
I remember there was, like at least
one. I thought
one
they were
split.
Picking him apart at that point, yeah. You know what I mean?
And then they just show him, and he's just completely fine.
He's fine.
He's all captive, but he's fine. And you kind of think, oh, maybe he's going to have a limp or something, but...
I had another... This was something that kind of was a stick up my ass the whole film. The characters just seem to pronounce random words wrong. And, like, I didn't have any examples written down, but they would just... Like, they would pronounce words just wrong enough that it would catch my ear.
Mm.
And again, going back to the jokes that aren't actual jokes, when Malcolm, Discount Joint Boy, escapes from the Germans after the lizard people eat all the Jobsism cult members, and he gets back to the main crew, they're like, "What? They're like, where are the others?" He goes, "Hitler ate them." That wasn't a euphemism. Maybe the point is just to get stuck in your head and make you overthink the joke.
No, with that scene, it seemed like that was like one of the few scenes where they held off, where you could tell there was a pause for you to laugh, and it just didn't work.
There should never be pauses in films for laughter.
Even comedies that make me laugh, that's always something that stands out like a sore thumb. But when it's a bad joke, it stands out even more so.
Well, we're still on the topic of Malcolm here. Something that really bothered me about him was the scene where he... was going on about how, oh, when I break these chains, it's gonna get rough for you, and you know, he just kind of goes on with that, and then he gets up to go fight. He blows on his knuckles, and it makes this metal sound.
I heard
and I was
that.
Just like, what the fuck is that? Why?
I heard that, and I forgot about it.
It sounded
that,
like he was clanking a sword or something.
Yeah,
you know? I was like, what the fuck is that?
It had the sound of like metal on metal.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just.
The first film
had these reference, like had these little things too that you almost you're not entirely sure if you heard it properly, and it's just things that you know that they put in deliberately that don't make any sense. Again, like a film that was written by five different people. This film had a $13 million budget. And made $400,000 in the theater, not counting however much they scammed Netflix out of to get this thing to be a Netflix exclusive for streaming. But the first movie, I think the first movie also only released in Finland and Germany, but that film made like $8.5 million. Mm-hmm. And this film made $400,000, and everyone hated it. And they're going to make a third film on Mars with the Soviet Union.
And is it actually greenlit for a third film, or yes. is it? I can only imagine what one how many of the 27 studios, because that was at least a minute of logos at the beginning. Oh, and all I could think was, wow, a lot of people lost a lot of money.
I thought it was bad enough when we watched the Adam Sandler movies, and those had a long list of studios attached to them. But Christ, this thing had so many people involved in it. Mm-hmm. It is a movie built by committee, and it makes absolutely no sense. But I also had on my list a joke that could have worked, and it was the EULA, where Tom Green convinces Adolf Hitler to sign into a business agreement, and he hides something in the end user license agreement that's going to give him control over Hitler. And even Hitler, who lives in, you know, the 1940s, he's scrolling through and he's like, whatever. He just scrolls straight to the bottom and hits accept on it. But they never do anything with that. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it's one of the times that they actually have a setup that just never goes anywhere.
Although actually, I could be wrong. Isn't that a setup like at the end when they end up blowing up the one ship? I thought that it was kind of circling back to that.
No, because they, like, he had Dominic's phone, aka Tom Green. Mm. He had Dominic's phone, so they, and the whole thing is like, oh, you know, he's a religious leader, he must be a hypocrite, so he probably jailbroke his own phone. Mm. So they somehow install the iXcommunicate app on Sasha's Nokia phone, which again,
that does not make any sense.
Yeah, they call it, and the ship implodes in on itself.
Oh, and actually, that's the other one, because when you see in the beginning of the movie, when the guy has the jailbroken phone, where it just, when it says iXcommunicate, it just obliterates the guy and doesn't harm anyone else in the vicinity of this tiny room.
Yeah,
but then you get to the end of the movie where they has the iXcommunicate and it just blows up this massive ship. I know that's like pretty much a nitpick in the midst of like of everything else in this shit movie, but I don't know. That was just something I had to bring up.
Yeah, they focus way too hard on way too long on just the most just the smallest stuff, like when they start talking about Sasha's Nokia phone, because he has one of the old Nokia phones. Mm-hmm. And it's such a stupid build-up to that thing being their kind of MacGuffin for the end of the film. And so the whole thing ends with them, the remnants of humanity, they abandon the Nazi moon base, Earth is completely unsalvageable, and they're on their way to Mars in the hopes that it's somewhat livable. And then in the credits, the camera goes towards Mars, and we find out that the Red Planet creatively is inhabited by the Soviet Union, who also creatively have built their civilization in the shape of a sickle and hammer. I don't know what they're going to do with it, since we already saw Stalin.
During the Last Supper scene, Last Supper scene in air quotes.
During we already saw Lizard Man Stalin. And I was kind of hoping they would do more with the Lizard Man characters. Because they didn't even really make them stereotypical. Like, we got Lizard Man, Osama bin Laden, Margaret Thatcher, Vladimir Putin, Hitler,
Sarah Palin,
Sarah Palin, who gets just torn apart and killed.
In all fairness, though, that was actually my biggest worry when I saw her show up in this scene. I just thought, oh no, is this going to be even more outdated jokes of Sarah Palin for the rest of the movie?
But they surprisingly didn't make any Sarah Palin jokes.
I think even this committee just realized that's a bad idea, that you can't go off of this material years after Irrelevance.
Yeah. Like, she was there. The original film had some Sarah Palinisms in it, but in this film, she's just there.
Mm-hmm.
She defends the fact that she fucked up the entire Earth, and then she gets torn apart for fucking up the entire Earth that they were trying to clear out so they could actually go back up and inhabit it.
Although this also seemingly happens like nearly 30 years after the fact, so they're a little delayed on that part.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little... The film seems to not understand its own script.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there's a lot of things that are happening 30 years after the fact that the characters are acting like it just happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it.
No.
I think that this film, they had 5 writers and nobody talked to each other. Everyone wrote like 20% of the script. Nobody really had any idea of when it was taking place or what was going on, but they just wrote their parts of the script and they just smushed it all together. And I think that's what happened.
Yep.
It's a movie built by committee. Not a very competent committee.
Now I just hope that whatever movies we have on the horizon are, one, not bad comedies, because there's honestly nothing worse to review than a bad comedy, which is probably why we started off with this review in particular.
I'm still not convinced that this is a comedy.
Oh. No, it's... I
don't think it counts. Like, Halloween was a comedy, even though it wasn't good. They were clearly telling jokes. In this, it just seems to be like a long laundry list of... pop culture references, except pop culture references that were out of date in 2016 when this film was supposed to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can say is I hope the best for all of the producers, the studios, and the investors who are getting conned out of contributing to a third movie in this piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really all I have to say. So, what are your closing thoughts?
Last season we closed on what I thought was one of the most painful, unfunny comedies. And I know you said you don't stand by this being a comedy, but there's just too much shit that's just too ridiculous for me to think that this is supposed to be like an action, like just a straight up action movie. But then again, this movie just fails on all fronts no matter what it's trying to go for, so...
The only person who deserves any sort of commendation on this is the costume designer and the set director.
Mm-hmm. No, I'd side with that one.
But Al, as someone who hasn't seen the first movie, what were your thoughts?
It was a horrible start to what's going to be a regrettable chain of films for this fourth iteration of the podcast.
Oh, this is going to be regrettable.
Yeah, I don't have much to say outside of why did I sit down for an hour and a half and watch this?
Because I asked you to.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I do things.
And to think we're going to have a fourth person who's not a part of this podcast, but we're going to have a fourth person who's going to come to this. And could you imagine what that poor sap would have to go through since this movie and then just be like, yeah, I'm out?
Just wait until next week. Would you have
cooked it for us now?
We have Disney Plus cooking in the slow cooker, and everyone's favorite movie about two dogs banging behind an Italian restaurant.
Oh,
of course, I'm talking about the live action Lady and the Tramp film.
Oh, you know, I've actually been good about avoiding pretty much every live action Disney movie for the last two and a half years. Unfortunately, this looks like it's going to break that chain.
Just wait until you find out that Lady and the Tramp has Andy Milonakis as a voice actor. That's not true.
I will take this microphone and I will shove it up your urethra.
That's fine. That's not my microphone. But
that's why I said this microphone.
Yeah,
that one. But anyway.
But anyway, this is the end. This is closing out the first part of our miserable retrek into bad movies. I'm Connor.
I am Colin.
And I'm Al.
Good night, Danny Trejo.
Good night, Danny Trejo.
Good night, Danny Trejo.